Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Right here from our radio and television studios in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Folks, you are tuned right. You are tuned properly to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. We broadcast live every weeknight from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Global Star Radio Network. That's the place to be with such luminaries as Russ Dizdar, Ted Brower, so many others. Dave Hodges. If I start naming them all, you know, we'll get lost. But we're simulcast, not just on Global Star, but we're simulcast. Yeah, I can talk on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and you can watch us live and by archive on YouTube Live, YouTube, right there. Just go to HagmannandHagmann.com, select your venue, whether you want to listen or watch or both. And, of course, HagmannReport.com for news, information, and analysis that you need to have in these perilous times. Don't forget, we have two websites, Hagmann and Hagmann.com, HagmannReport.com. Bookmark them both. I'm Doug Hagmann at the helm, a fellow investigator, researcher, and, of course, my son, Joe Hagmann, something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. And tonight, this episode is going to be one of the more critical episodes. You know, we are winding down. We are winding into a period, I think, of like no other. And tonight's guest is a man I've been following his work. I've been reading his material. I've read his book, his one book, Technocracy Rising. Our guest tonight is Patrick Wood. He's a leading and credible expert on sustainable development, something everyone's heard about. The green economy. You've heard about it. Mm-hmm. Agenda 21, 2030 agenda, and, of course, historic technocracy. Now, he's the author of Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, out last year. If you don't have yourself a copy of this book, you're missing out, because, I've read from his book and cited his book on this very show.
And I think I do on a weekly basis.
You know, because everything in that book, folks, is topical. Now, Patrick Wood is a leading expert on the Trilateral Commission. See, we talk about the Trilateral Commission. Now we have an expert on the Trilateral Commission, their policies, their achievements in creating their self-proclaimed this new international economic order, which is the essence of sustainable development. Look no further than the Trilateral Commission to understand what this green agenda is, what the sustainable development is on a global scale. Now, Patrick Wood is an economist by education. He's a financial analyst and a writer by profession. And he's an American constitutionalist by choice. Now, those are his words. And I would describe him the same way. In my book, you know, I look up to a number of, just a limited number of people. And in terms of research, investigation, Patrick Wood is second to none, in my view. He deserves a badge. We should make him an honorary investigator, private investigator, send him the badge, the paperwork. Because he's that good. While maintaining, and not too many people are able to do this, while maintaining a biblical worldview. You see, through the lens of the Bible, prophetic, and scripture, this is how we have to look at things today without being so heavenly minded that we're no earthly good, as to cite Chuck Baldwin from yesterday. Now, He has deep historical insights into the modern attacks on sovereignty, the very topics that we're talking about today. Property rights, personal freedom, such attacks are epitomized by the implementation of United Nations policies. And these include Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, sustainable development, smart growth, smart grid, smart this, and the widespread adoption of Common Core state standards for our schools. That's right. He's a frequent speaker. He can speak better than I can, most assuredly, which everyone's out there is clapping. In fact, Eric's clapping. And he's a guest on radio shows across the world. In fact, I have to check on this, but I believe he was just not too long ago on Coast to Coast. His current research builds on the hegemony of the Trilateral Commission, focusing on specifically on technocracy. And if you don't know what technocracy is, he's going to tell you. Transhumanism.
Yeah.
Scientism. And transforming global economics, politics, and religion. This is Patrick Wood. This is our guest today. Now, I want to mention, I'm honored to mention that portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in a prep mode today, right now. And I was talking with Joe and Eric and my daughter, Jackie, who's just a tremendously intelligent young lady. And we were talking about preps, and she said, you know, what will happen? And I mean, she's kind of getting into this mindset and saying, you know, there's something really wrong with things. And, well, so what would happen if there was something that took place? And of course, supply disruptions came to mind. And she loves to eat. She's got a wonderful figure, but she loves to eat. Eat good food. Now, wait a second. Eat good food. She's sitting in the studio here. I have to add. But she loves to eat good food. And here's the deal. Here's the deal behind this. I fed her some chicken from AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. I fed her some vegetables from AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. And I asked her, without knowing it, and she said, hey, this is pretty good. And she went for seconds. And I asked her how she liked it. I mean, overall. And she said, aside from your cooking, it's great. Good food. Thank you. Well, I said, do you realize that this is the long-term storable food? No. Yeah. It's that good, folks. You could eat it every day without an emergency. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They've got the Thrive brand of food. They'd even have powdered water if that would be applicable. That's a joke, but of course. Folks, visit AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com for their Thrive brand of food. Dietary needs, whatever your special needs might be, they do free consults. Chance from American Survival Wholesale. And it's a veteran-owned, Christian-owned company. They have the same values as you and I. Tested and proven by my daughter, Jackie. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Also, a four paws up from Lady, who got some leftovers and loved it. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. One announcement, two announcements, actually, before we bring Mr. Wood on. I don't know whether you saw the news today. And, folks, this is a message. I want you to please listen very carefully to this message. Hillary Clinton went after Alex Jones today, personally. Hillary Clinton went after those who she and her team considers to be the right-wing conspiracy. If you have followed my writings and followed this program, Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch, the yak, time for a yak attack, Clinton, if you follow my writings, you've seen where I've been pretty heavy on Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch, the yak, Clinton. Well, she's coming out swinging, folks. She's attacking Jones. She's attacking. And I choose not to get into it right at this moment. But folks, let me tell you something. They are on the attack. Now, you know, I've been on with Alex Jones a couple of hours. In fact, last week, I think it was. You know that we all have targets on our back. Now, these people are desperate. They're evil. And they were informed that their political nemesis, Dick Morris, is going to appear on this program next week. That's right, you heard me. Dick Morris, the former political consultant to the Clintons. He's going to join us next week. But I just want to say this, the landscape is changing, has changed, effectively changed today. We are under attack. If you're a conservative, you are under attack. You just might not know it yet. Please take that to heart. And again, as I mentioned, next Wednesday, Dick Morris. Thank you, John Robertson. He's going to be joining us on our program. Former Clinton political strategic analyst, political analyst, who knows the Clintons inside and out, and has a new book out as well. But again, those are the two announcements I wanted to make. Folks, take me very seriously and take me at my word. Understand that the left wing Nazi democratic socialist globalist Luciferian elite are coming after all of us. Joe, I'm going to turn it over to you.
We're going to get right to our guest, Mr. Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. This is not only the latest book by Patrick Wood, but this is the topic of discussion for tonight, as this pertains to so much of the issues we talk about, from Bible prophecy to economics to political science and the dark horse of the New World Order and the New International Economic Order. Mr. Patrick Wood, it's so great to have you on the Hagman and Hagman Report for the first time. How are you doing?
Hi, Joe. Hi, Doug. I'm doing great. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to address your listeners out there across the country and world. And I'm sure we're going to have a great program tonight.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us and agreeing to come on. A lot of people have read your book, me and my father included, and we find it fascinating. And for those of you who might be unfamiliar in the audience, I want to ask Patrick this for you. What is technocracy?
Wow. Well, I tell you, I use this word on purpose because historically it's the right word to use. For the most part, we're going to talk a lot about sustainable development, Agenda 21, stuff like that that emanates from the United Nations. But what all those things are, global warming included, what all those things are is warmed over technocracy from the 1930s. And what it was back in the 1930s was a very popular movement in the United States. It was called Technocracy, Inc. It was preceded by a stint at Columbia University for about a year. They actually got thrown out of Columbia. Imagine that. I guess too hot to handle even for that progressive institution. But technocracy was an economic system that was cooked up by scientists and engineers, prominent ones too, I might add, of that day, because they believed that capitalism was dead. They thought certainly it had died after the Great Depression started and things were very bad. They thought it's just a matter of time that it's going to breathe its last breath and society is going to fall apart. So scientists and engineers to the rescue. And they cooked up this economic utopian type system called technocracy. And here's how they defined themselves in 1938, finally in a magazine appropriately called The Technocrat. Imagine that. The Technocrat is one of their official magazines. They said, and this is a direct quote from the magazine, "Technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population," close quote. That's the best definition in one sentence that I've ever seen. I couldn't do any better if I tried. And I could have written this yesterday. This definition is still just as good today as it was back then. It's the science of social engineering. That ought to be enough right there to put the hair up on the back of your neck, I think.
Absolutely.
What is the science of social engineering? Well, we'll mention this later, I'm sure, too. But there was a book written in 1932 by Aldous Huxley. It was called Brave New World. Now, the phrase Brave New World is currently in English vernacular all over the place. Anytime something happens of a weird name, oh, it's a Brave New World, isn't it? Nobody really knows that Huxley, who was a Brit, was a kind of a name dropper and a jet setter back in those days. There weren't jets, but he was that kind of guy. Huxley observed technocracy, even as it was at Columbia University. And it inspired him to write his book, Brave New World. Not too many people know that.
No, but that's the first time us hearing about this. And we have a frequent guest, Paul McGuire, who writes extensively about Huxley and his work in Brave New World.
Actually, no, I talked to Paul about this about 3 weeks ago. In fact, Patrick Wood's name came up, and we talked about Julian Huxley. You did say Julian, right?
No, not Julian.
Aldous. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. They were brothers, as you know.
Right.
Yes.
And, yeah, okay, got it. So, yes, but it's very interesting and noted in your writings. Go ahead, sir.
Well, my point was that, different people might have had different observations at the time, but that was a prominent one. And the conclusion was scientific dictatorship. And that's exactly where technocracy is taking us today. We've seen this play out over the last 40 years since the founding of the Trilateral Commission, I might add, in 1973. And, this is the dominant meme in the world today, the science of social engineering. And you notice the word entire appears twice in that definition. This is an interesting word. I stress that because, talks about the entire social mechanism, and it talks about the entire population. I mention that because of programs like No Child Left Behind, the entire population. You see that language frequently in the 2030 Agenda document that is called inclusiveness. Everybody has to participate. Nobody gets left behind. This is important to technocracy, to have everybody in the system, because, of course, you cannot be managed. You cannot be the object of management unless you're in the system. So they desperately want to include everybody in the social mechanism so that they can apply their science of social engineering to direct society the way they think it ought to go. There's problems with that, obviously. A lot of people, including probably you and me, don't want to be told to do by some social engineer or scientist or engineer in general what we ought to do with our time, money, talents, expertise, and life. It's not their life. It's our life. And, this is kind of an age-old problem on one hand, but we really see it working out today because, oh man, so many people are interested in telling you and me what to do. And they don't know us at all, of course. They just say, well, this is what you ought to do. I say, well, what authority to say that? Well, science says that you should do this, that, and the other. Oh, really? I've never met science. Maybe you could introduce me someday. Well, no, you can't meet science. You don't have a PhD. You got to have at least a PhD to meet the oracle of science, right? So forget that. You're never going to meet science, and I won't either because I don't have that PhD. But science says what you ought to do, and therefore you should just be trusting and quit being a troublemaker and a skeptic. Quit being a denier, like Al Gore calls us, because deniers deserve to be punished for not believing like him. This is a very insidious situation we find ourselves in today. We're moving rapidly towards this system of scientific dictatorship. And I should stress probably at the outset here, I'm not talking about bashing all engineers or scientists. There are many, many good scientists and engineers who have their heads screwed on right and don't want to take over the world. Plenty of them. But the ones that do want to take over the world, they're the problem that we're dealing with here. And, the other thing we should stress, too, is we talk about dictatorship. I'm not talking about Hitler. I'm not talking about Stalin, you know, that type of dictator, Mao Zedong. I'm not talking about a person who is a dictator. The dictator in this case is the system. This is new. This has never happened before like this. The system itself becomes the dictator. Now, there are people who make policies in that system who, you know, create software algorithms and stuff to corral you this way or that way. But it's basically the system that is constraining us, that's putting us into this straitjacket, if you will, denying our choices, denying our movement, causing us to modify our behavior because it has us corralled in. Some people kind of feel like a lonely steer out in that giant feedlot in the prairie. You're with 100,000 cattle, and you know, they all look alike. But
that's right. But they're into all the chute, right? Into the
they're
chute.
All managed scientifically. That's right. They got the most scientifically designed ration of food that they could possibly have. They get weighed, you know, all the time. They get poked. They get they get castrated and cut, stuff like that. Man, they just shove them this way and shove them that way, and they do all best they can do is go moo. And you know, people are starting to feel that way. I think I hear this all the time. I say, man, you know what's next on this agenda? Well, scientific dictatorship is the big problem today, and I hope we can really develop that thought. And if we do have a chance to develop a biblical thought along the way, I would also point out that that this system of scientific dictatorship very likely plays directly into end time prophecy. I personally believe it does. Some people don't, obviously, but I think there's reason for the study of Bible prophecy today simply because of this system that's rising up around the world. And we've never had a global delusion before. I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but there have been continental delusions where a continent or a part of a continent will believe some screwball thing and run off, you know, on a tangent. But there's never really been a global delusion before. And the Bible prophesies that there will be, and we see that today. The global delusion is in the form of sustainable development, global warming, green economy, those sorts of things, that the United Nations has taken to every nation on earth. All 193 nations that belong to the United Nations have signed off on the 2030 agenda, for instance, and on the Global Warming Pact from last October, November. So we're kind of in dark times on one hand, but on the other hand, those of us who are becoming more aware of the topic have an opportunity to come up with creative solutions to try and throw a monkey wrench into their mechanism. And I would say, no matter how pessimistic it seems, Americans found a way to reject technocracy in the 1930s, and they did so quite effectively. And that means that our generation also potentially could reject technocracy as well. But time is a-wasting, I'll say that. So
yes,
here we are talking about it.
We got about 2 minutes before the break, and folks who might have joined us late, Patrick Wood is our guest. He is the author of Technocracy Rising. Folks, you want to get this book for sure. Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. We were just talking about what is the definition of technocracy, and it's the science of social engineering, the system of a scientific dictatorship. And you mentioned something important, Mr. Wood, the correlation between the current political climate, spiritual climate, and Bible prophecy. And in the foreword of the book, you have in here Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, which I find is one of my most favorite Bible verses, which goes on to say, that which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? it has already been in ancient times before us. And that makes me wonder, you know, when we talk about this scientific dictatorship, we know that this one world system of religion, economics, political, and military might have been before, in the days of Nimrod, the Tower of Babel, and what they did after the flood. And we're seeing this come around again. When we come back from the break, Mr. Wood, if we could jump into the history of technocracy, and then from there go on to how it crept into our system. Again, you mentioned the 1930s, how the American people have fended it off for a time, and it's rearing its ugly head back around again. And this time around, we are living in a technological age, an age of transhumanism, an age in which technology is accepted like, you know, your right hand. It's basically a part of us. And how can we fend off something that has become so close and near and dear to us in our everyday life? Folks, we're listening. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report with Patrick Wood, radio show host, author, Technocracy Rising. Folks, go to Amazon. Check out the book. Go to his website. Sign up for his newsletter. We'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us.
Listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report, our very special guest during this show, a show dedicated to technocracy. Technocracy Rising is the book written by Patrick Wood, our guest. His website, technocracy.news. Now, on his website, you can check. There's an 11-minute video. Go ahead and watch that to determine whether you need to read Technocracy Rising. It opened an entire new chapter for me, and it got me looking at different things. I used to believe that communism was actually the mechanism for this New World Order and socialism and all of the isms, but when the deep, dark, dirty, tiddlywinks aspect of this, when you start flipping the layers of the onion back, what am I saying, for crying out loud, when you start peeling the layers of the onion back, you start to see that technocracy, when you understand the Brave New World, the books by Aldous Huxley and George Orwell, who believed that technocracy would result in a scientific dictatorship. Brave New World in 1984, of course. And then you read Technocracy Rising. You get it. You get it. I mean, Patrick Wood is articulate. He's informative. He's well-researched. Website, technocracy.news. Again, the book, Technocracy Rising. I highly recommend it to everyone. And just before we get back to Mr. Wood, I just want to say this. The first shots, shall we say, the opening salvo in a real PR war, were fired today by Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch, the Yak Clinton, at all of the right-wing news. I hesitate to say right-wing. It's the conservatives who are calling out the criminal cabal that surrounds Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the people who are writing about her. The attack has started. I mean, for real, the real attack has started. So just let me say that. And all of us, the conservatives, are in the path of the bullets, the salvo. Trust me on this when I say that This was an enlightening day, informative day. I'm not going to say it was good. It was just it was bizarre, and we're seeing things now that I just never thought I'd see. Again, our guest is Patrick Wood. I'm going to turn the floor over to him, Joe. Patrick Wood is perhaps one of the most well-researched, articulate men about technocracy. So, Mr. Wood, thanks for joining us. Thank you for being our guest, and thank you for writing the book that you did. I'm going to turn it over to you. Biblical worldview, technocracy, scientific dictatorship, just lay it all out.
Yeah, the history of technocracy.
Yeah. Well, okay. The history of technocracy goes back a very long ways. We have to really get it, we have to go back into the 1800s, actually. The philosophical father of technocracy was a French philosopher. Do you want his English name or his French name? His his English name is Henri Saint-Simon. His French name is Henri Saint-Simon. He lived between 1760 and 1825, and you can look up Henry as H-E-N-R-I Saint-S-I-M-O-N. He's not Saint S-T period. He's not a Catholic saint, okay? That's his name, actually, Saint-Simon. And he's recognized as the father of technocracy, even by the technocrats in the 1930s themselves. he was is an interesting character. A lot of stuff came out of his writing and his, thinking, whatever. He had a heavy influence on Karl Marx, on Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the philosopher, French philosopher, and Auguste Comte, who was the father of sociology. He was Saint-Simon's primary disciple back in those days. And, well, between Henri and Auguste Comte, they kind of set the stage for all of technocracy and all of transhumanism, I might add, too. And to understand why I bring up the word transhumanism in the same breath as technocracy, you're going to see that they're like Siamese twins that are joined at the hip. In other words, if technocracy is the science of social engineering, which has to do with society, with the global economy, things like that, then transhumanism has to do with the science of human engineering. And it might make some intuitive sense to you to imagine why would anybody want to create a science-based society without having science-based people to live in it. Well, that's kind of self-evident. It wouldn't work very well if you had a science-based society and you only had people maybe like you and I that aren't particularly, we don't aspire to be immortal and have science, rework us and create humans 2.0 and all that kind of stuff right under our nose. But technocracy really started to take effect in the early 1900s. People started talking about scientific management. World War I was a big catalyst, I believe, as a lot of engineers that contributed to World War I, to the devastation of it, I might say, there was a little bit of angst amongst the scientific community, the engineering community, that they had somehow contributed to the first mechanized war of all history. And it was true. That was them. They did it. They created those tanks and those airplanes and the bombs and the machine guns and all the stuff people used to kill each other during World War I. So they had a lot of time to think about stuff during the 20s, the Roaring 20s, and by the time the Great Depression hit, they figured that it was curtains on capitalism, free enterprise, and that they needed to do something to correct the situation. So they set about purposely on a plan to create an alternative economic system. This is where it's different and than anything else we've ever seen in the world. When I say an economic system, the current price-based economic system that we know and we grew up with and we're perfectly comfortable with, where supply and demand determines the price of goods in the marketplace, where people are free to make a better mousetrap if they can, and consumers are free to choose mousetrap A or mousetrap B or mousetrap C or whatever they fancy. The price-based economic system, the technocrats believed, was completely outmoded, doomed to failure, and it needed to be replaced by another kind of economic system altogether. Their economic system was to be based on energy. And their logic was that everything in life takes energy to happen. Now, if there was no machines and no electricity, you simply have manpower. U equals one manpower. If you had a horse, you had one horsepower. If you had a team of four horses, you had four horsepower. And they would argue that the addition of energy into society was essential to all economic activity. So what better way to control economic activity than through the control of energy? And the technocrats, while they were at Columbia University, actually cooked up a scheme for an energy currency that was to be issued to people, kind of like a script in a way, a little bit like food stamps are issued today. And they envisioned making a forecast of all the energy that would be produced in the next month or three-month period. And they would simply divide that by the population and send out a ration of energy credits to all the people in that society. The idea would be then you could take your energy credits down to the store and buy stuff according to the energy that it went in to make that stuff. So a shirt, for instance, you could think theoretically that a shirt was grown by a farmer who maybe had a tractor and he had to ship it to a cotton gin and they had to put it on a boat and somebody else sewed it up on a sewing machine. That all took energy. It finally got sent out to a store and you ended up buying it down at Target or wherever, Walmart or something. You bought the shirt. Well, there's a finite amount of energy that went into make that shirt, and they hypothesized that that's the perfect pricing system. We don't need to have supply and demand tell us what to price things. We'll price things according to energy. Everybody will get their fair share of energy in the system. And there were some caveats on their energy currency. One is that it would expire at the end of the term. If you didn't spend it, you lose it. So there's no way to carry over energy credits into the next period. Next period, you get another quota. Everybody does. And so they surmised that there was no need to save money, if you will, in such a system. There was no need to have private property either, because everything was going to be essentially managed and controlled by the scientists and engineers. So this economic system, an energy-based economic system, another way to express that is a resource-based economic system, is to be based on science. They wanted to engineer all production and all consumption. Now, what that means is, if you're a businessman, they want to tell you exactly what you're allowed to make. If you're a consumer, they want to tell you exactly what you're allowed to consume. And so they're controlling both ends of the system. You can see this is a rather totalitarian concept that they cooked up. But it's insidious. And you know, let me just say some of the highlights of technocracy that I bring up when I speak is, by nature, it produces volumes of inviolable regulations that are science-based. It always comes down to science-based regulations that are put forward. It creates totalitarian control in the end, but it's not socialism or communism, both of which were based on a price-based economic system. And it seeks to replace, of course, price-based economic system with an energy-based system, an energy currency. And, you know, having said that, let me read you from the Technocracy Study Course, which was written in 1934 by the two co-founders of Technocracy Incorporated.
Okay.
Howard Scott was one guy. The other guy was M. King Hubbard. That's not the Scientology Hubbard. It's M. King Hubbard. And M. King, you might remember, if you know a little bit about oil history, in 1954, he was the guy that came up with the peak oil theory that said that we were going to run out of energy someday when reserves cannot be discovered fast enough to take care of demand, etc. And so M. King Hubbard later, 20 years after this, became kind of a founding father of the eco movement. But that aside, let's rewind back to 1934 when he wrote the Technocracy Study Course. That's available on the internet, by the way. Go search for it. There's a scanned copy out there. You can get it, download it, see if I'm telling you the truth here. There was only 7 requirements that these engineers wrote down. I'm going to read you the first 5. Engineers do that. We give an engineer a project, he makes a list of requirements. That's just a knee-jerk reaction for an engineer or a scientist. Here's the first 5 requirements that just got you got to ponder this and think about, wow, is this relevant for today or what? Number one, quote, register on a continuous 24-hour per day basis the total net conversion of energy. Number two, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load. Close quote. Let me just stop with those two for a second. Can you sense the idea of smart grid in those first 2 requirements? By means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load. This is the language that we hear from our utility companies today, thanks to President Obama's launching the smart grid project back in 2009 with stimulus money. And the utility companies were glad to take all that stimulus money and shove these smart meters down our throat. Well, I'll suggest to you, this is clear evidence that the technocrats are working this plan today, because that was the first 2 requirements that they had to meet in order for technocracy to succeed, was control over energy. Okay, let me read the next 3. Remember, there's only 5 I'm going to give you here. Number 3, quote, provide a continuous inventory of all production and consumption. Number 4, quote, provide a specific registration of the type, kind, etc., of all goods and services where produced and where used. Number 5, quote, provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual, plus a record and description of the individual. Close quote. Now, there's the first 5 requirements of technocracy. The first 2 allude very directly to smart grid and the control over energy. The last 3 give you a panoramic view of what I call the total surveillance society. Provide a specific registration of the type, kind, etc., of all goods and services where used and where produced. Provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual. Think your credit card records, all your purchase records and stuff that are sucked up like so much dog hair off your rug in your house. They go after everything. The government has collected every conceivable piece of information about members of society, the entire society, not just the terrorists, not just the bad guys. They're collecting information on every single citizen and human in our society, and that's true across the globe as well, but especially in America. So a record and description of each individual has been duly created. specific registration and all records of consumption and production is duly recorded. Energy is being duly recorded. And a continuous inventory of all production and consumption, that's economic talk, that's also being accomplished today. That's the essence. Yeah.
Right into Agenda 21.
Totally.
Exactly. Totally. What they purport and suggest in their plan of total world domination, whether it's control of resources or man-made labor. This is Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030, which is Agenda 21. And we see where the end game is here.
The total well, it's control over everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, control over everything. Everything that moves, everything that doesn't move, everything that's inert, every machine, and every human, and every animal on the face of the planet is in view. That's everything.
Yeah, and it's come out recently that the FBI has been basically capturing DNA of every person for the last 40 years, cataloging it, and Google and other technological companies have come out and said that they are sequencing and cataloging every living species on Earth.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Let me point out, we're going to talk about the Trilateral Commission along the way. We haven't laid that groundwork yet, but I want to bring up a point since you just kind of related it. The FBI. The FBI is one of the big four intelligence agencies in our country. You got Homeland Security, the CIA, and so on, Department of Justice, and the National Security Agency, and all of these agencies, in fact, all 17 intelligence agencies in the entire country, they answer to one man, or one office anyway. So far, it's always been a man. But that's the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, he's called. He's the intelligence czar for the country. We no longer have an independent FBI or a CIA or an NSA. They all work directly for the Director of National Intelligence. He was given authority to take over all of the other agencies in the country by George Bush, not surprisingly, I guess, in 2005 when that office was created. And the first DNI came in and reorganized the entire intelligence mechanism in the United States. The problem is they didn't really tell anybody how they reorganized it. It wasn't immediately intuitive, and nobody wrote any newspaper articles about it back then. But they did. And we can see it today. I mean, there's plenty of evidence that this has actually been the case today. The DNI is a cabinet-level position, answers to the president, only to the president, and everybody else answers to him. And he controls every line item budget of every one of the intelligence agencies in our country. He gives them all their marching orders. They can't do anything without the DNI's approval. Well, here's an interesting thing. The first ever Director of National Intelligence, appointed by George Bush, was John Negroponte, who just happened to be a member of the Trilateral Commission. When we're done talking about other things that the Trilateral Commission have done to us over the years, you won't be surprised that he picked John Negroponte. But I would ask the question, I think anybody would, did John Negroponte reorganize the intelligence apparatus in America for the good of American citizens? Or did he reorganize the entire intelligence mechanism for the good of the Trilateral Commission and its members? Fair question, in my book. We're done talking about this. You'll see, yep, that's what they did. That's just one more thing in a long line, a long list of things that these people have done to perpetrate this fraud on us. They're engineering, if you will, technocracy. They have been since, this group has been doing it since 1973 when it was originally founded. I only wish I knew it back then. I didn't when I first started writing about the Trilateral Commission. And by the way, my first two books were called Trilaterals Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2. That was back in from 1978 to 81. And I co-authored those two books with the late Professor Anthony Sutton. He passed several years ago. But we documented what these people were doing back then quite well, but we did not understand technocracy. All we knew was what they said about the new international economic order. That's what they said. So we talked about that a lot. But if we had understood technocracy back then, we would have understood what they meant by the word new. Isn't that funny how just a simple little word can make all the difference in your understanding of something? It's just,
absolutely.
In a facetious sort of way, it kind of reminds you what Bill Clinton said, what he said, it depends on what the word is means. It's like, okay, well, whatever.
And with the weaponization of the English language, how they've changed so many words, or the meanings of so many different words, really weaponizing the language against us, doing so for the purposes of confusion, and it has worked perfectly for them and their agenda.
Right. Well, the surveillance of society today, it's not about protection at all. It's not about protection of our country. It's not about national security at all. It's about setting up a data monitoring system for the technocrats to be able to monitor their social engineering project. And every good engineer knows you can't build a factory without monitoring systems in place. You need to know what's going on out there. Are all the machines working the way they're supposed to? Is the assembly line moving? Are the conveyor belts still, tracking? You have to have monitoring in a modern factory today in order for it to keep running, and so you can see problems maybe even before they happen. Well, this is the mentality of technocrats, because...
You're right, Mr. Wood. Sorry to interrupt you there, but we're coming up against the break. And to give you people an example of what you were just talking about, about a decade ago, Walmart rolled out an RFID system for their inventory. So when an item was taken off the shelf and purchased, it automatically registered with the computers for them to reorder that same item to keep the stocks, the shelves stocked properly with their products. And this has been rolled out to a number of new applications, and there are a number of other applications on the horizon, including healthcare, that they want to incorporate this technology into. Folks, you're listening to author Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising. We're going to be back with him for the rest of the show, talking about a number of issues pertaining to technocracy and the total system of control through scientific dictatorship it encompasses. We'll be right back. Stay with us.